you have a definition of prosperity, which is the power to take a walk in the woods on a weekday. And you talk more about being able to afford college tuition and having choices and options and so on. But that walk in the woods really spoke to me because as a kid, I spent a lot of time walking in the woods. When the pandemic happened, my wife and I moved to a cabin in the woods, and it was really helpful for us having the space to work and flourish. And we took walks every day, a lot of the time in the middle of the day. And these days I go surf in the middle of the day and I don't feel guilty about it. And it's a symbol of something. And I thought it really resonated with me.
What I'd like to talk about is, and I don't feel guilty about it. Because isn't that what's wrong with us? Whatever.
Right?
I always say by the time you achieve those things you want so much, it changes you to the degree that you have a hard time sitting down and enjoying that financial freedom because you become this warrior who can put the pedal down and keep it down and maintain endurance forever. I don't feel guilty. And I'm still working on that, not feeling guilty. I have never lost sight of the fact that right now, when I'm done with you, I have the option of going for a walk. You know, I didn't have that for 30 years of my life. I would work Friday nights. I'd work Saturday mornings. I was an entrepreneur. You know, this is how it is in small business. Everybody wants to have their own business. Well, it's a lot of work. To take a walk on a Thursday at 3 o'clock. I hope I never take that for granted.
Welcome to Talking Billions. We talk about big ideas, big inspirations, big topics. We take on the hardest subject of all, money. How to make it, save it, keep it. But our conversations lead us to an even bigger question. What it means to live a rich life beyond money. My guests share their practices, principles, and evergreen wisdom. I'm your host, Bogumil Baranowski, author, TEDx speaker, investor, and a founding partner of Sicard Associates, a boutique investment firm founded in New York City. Join me on this quest to unearth the wisdom of the ages. My guest today is John Seforek. He's the owner of a real estate business and enjoys total financial freedom. He wrote The Wealthy Gardener, Life Lessons on Prosperity Between Father and Son. He wrote it to distill his own wisdom on money and success for his ambitious son who was entering adulthood. John's book became a huge success, a bestseller, and an instant classic. He has lived in Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania with his wife, Patty, for over 30 years. He has a daily wealth blog at wealthygardener.com. We talk about John's childhood and upbringing and how those days influence his relationship with money, the unique storytelling shared in the book, a parable of a wealthy gardener, and John's own intimate stories of struggle and success. John explains how financial freedom is a way of life. We learn from John that prosperity is the power to take a walk in the woods on a weekday, pay for college tuitions, and live with choices, options, and power. We have a fascinating discussion about how we spend our time and the need for impact activity in our days. John shares his experience with stock market investments and how real estate investments resonated better with his personality and expertise. We talk about the discomfort and the pursuit of wealth, the importance of relationships and alone time, and last but not least, we touch on John's own definition of success. John and I had a really fun conversation that continued after we stopped recording. I shared my last book with him, and he was kind enough to contribute to my new book, Crisis Investing. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Please help me welcome John Seforek. Hello, dear listener. I have a new book out. It's a soft launch, and you're among the first to know about it. It's called Crisis Investing. It's a collection of 100 essays, 500 pages, that I wrote to our clients during the global COVID pandemic. I share our lessons from managing family fortunes through one of the most difficult periods in recent history. It's an intimate look behind the scenes, with a retrospective commentary that I added after. The economic and financial backdrop might feel unique to that time, but you'll see that the investment principles shared are timeless. The book includes kind words from Guy Spier, the author of The Education of a Value Investor, William Green, the author of Richer, Wiser, Happier, Lauren Templeton, the author of Investing the Templeton Way, Christopher Mayer, the author of 100 Beggars, Gautam Bate, the author of The Joys of Compounding, James E. Hughes, the author of Complete Family Wealth, Brett Barrett, who's a co-founder and host of the Choose FI podcast, and John Seforek, the author of The Wealthy Gardener, Lessons on Prosperity Between Father and Son. If you're enjoying the show, I think you'll enjoy the book. Head over to Amazon, look it up, Crisis Investing, Bogumil Baranowski, and enjoy a discounted price for both Kindle and paperback. Please review it, rate it, share it. Your support means the world to me. And now, on with the show. Well, hello, John. Thank you for joining me today.
It's a privilege, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
So, John, you know that I'm a big fan of your book. I read it a while ago when it came out, and I was rereading it this weekend, so it's really fresh in my mind. And as I mentioned to you, I appreciate the way you delivered ideas that feel familiar, but somehow they are received better because of your unique way of storytelling that I'll ask you about in a second. But I always like to start from the beginning, if you indulge me, and I'm curious about your childhood and upbringing and how you think they influenced your relationship with money and wealth.
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, I'm born and raised outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Past generations, this was a coal mining area, certainly not in my generation, but that's where my ancestors came from. My grandfather was a coal miner. My other grandfather was a farmer. That's the rural America middle class that I come from, 100%. We weren't rich, we weren't poor, and we were very happy in between. That's middle class outside of Pittsburgh. I think my money story starts probably whenever I'm the first person in my generation to, in my family, to ever graduate from college, which is a big honor, except when you realize that I come from a chiropractic college and I'm 24 years old. I never had to really worry about money. We were sports guys. We were just living happy lives. At the age of 24, I graduate with a whole bunch of student debts that nobody can see, $200,000 in today's dollars, got married right out of school. Unlike a lot of people who will go into practice, I guess, and get their feet wet, learn the ropes a little bit. No, I was too good for that. I had to jump in both feet and start my own business. So now I'm down another $50,000. 24 years old, down $250,000, and it's day one, and I don't have any patience. And so let the race begin. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that's going to be a pretty hard 20 era for me and my wife. We had two children in that area in that span of time. We got our business going. And by the age of 30, I would say that that's when I realized that this big invisible debt is going to really control my whole life if I don't change a lot of things fast. It's just, it was overwhelming. That's where I came from. First in my generation to graduate from college and all that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. We'll come back to it. Towards the end of the book, you talk about being slow and steady. And I think as many of us in the early years after school, we're all in a rush, but we'll come back to it. I like the idea of exploring that a little bit. Big question about your book. So The Wealthy Gardener, Lessons on Prosperity Between Father and Son. Where did the inspiration come from? What made you decide to sit down, write it down? And tell me more. And I'm really curious about the unique way of storytelling. It's sort of two parallel ways of delivering the same ideas in the book, and you can tell the audience a little bit more about it. I really enjoyed it. I'm curious, how did it come about?
So the book, The Wealthy Gardener, and the subtitle tells a lot about it. It's Lessons on Prosperity Between Father and Son. Now, there's a father and a son character in the book. There's a... but. For me, the inspiration came from my own son. He was in college. I'm 50. So if you can think of, you know, what I'm talking about, it's starting at the age of 24, getting to the age of 50. I climbed my mountain. I got to the other side and it actually worked. You know, I was there. I reached financial independence and then some. And I saw my son getting ready to go out there and just start at his own age of early 20s. So it doesn't take a lot of imagination to say, I realize that I'm not going to prevent any kind of pain in my kids' lives, but boy, why can't I just pass the baton and just give him my lessons so that he doesn't have to relearn it all like I did? That can really prolong a process. It's not necessary. If you can start with the right education, you're going to go through your own climb, but it's going to be a lot faster climb than what, you know, I did coming out of school, being pretty uneducated on a lot of things. That was the inspiration. I was just going to try to work with my son. He was going to, the book was for him. Did he know that? Was I straight from the start? Not exactly. I kind of wrote a book and I asked him to be my editor. And that kind of got him in the back door. And we got to discuss a lot of things. He was in college. I was retired. I would send out maybe two chapters a week. He would come back with edits. We'd go back and forth and argue, clarify points. And it was just a real cool 2 to 3 years for us, going back and forth. At a time when, you know, your kids are in college and they're pretty far away from you. So it allowed that connection to stay alive. That is exactly how the book happened. And when you're teaching to your kids, you know, about money and you're talking about jamming stuff down their throats, it might be a pretty dry subject. Coming from old dad, not too many of them want to hear it. And so That's how the fictional characters became more relevant. Maybe we could talk about this role, and it just sticks. You got to make lessons stick, I think, on an emotional level. I don't think it's really complicated on a cognitive level, rationally, to do the things I say in the book. I think that it's really challenging to say, okay, to get yourself to do the things you already know you should be doing. I think that is the challenge of it all. So I wanted to have a story that could maybe stick a little more. If you can experience my experience, then you're on your own. You got what I got. I can't do any more than that.
It's a very personal book, especially the other half where you put a lot about yourself. And when I was reading it, I was thinking of when I was writing Money Life Family and I was sharing early drafts of the book. And I put a lot of myself in the book to explain why I do certain things, why I think a certain way, because I thought anybody can write a book about principles, but why do they matter in my life and how they influence my life? Was it easy for you to make it so intimate and personal? It's a very vulnerable place to be.
It is. And by the way, I love your book. I love what you're talking about in your book. You and I, we think so much alike, and I think it's fantastic that you'll find people from different fields that come to the same conclusions in life. You know, we don't vary a whole lot. We all come to the same conclusions. It just takes some people like me longer to figure it out than people like you. So I would say that, it's intimate because it was a book between me, for me and my son. Mm-hmm. I didn't write this book saying that this is going to be shared with anybody else. I'm not sure I could have been so forthright if I had known this was going to be, you know, hit number 46 in our country on Amazon, and it was going to get out there, and it's going to be bought by Penguin. It's going to be like, oh, wait, I don't know if I need, maybe
I would have.
I didn't need that. I did need my son to understand, but I think maybe that's what made it a better book. Yeah, people saw that I was willing to do what you did, care a little bit more beyond the little prescriptive 1, 2, 3 steps that you find in most finance books.
I think the best books are written either for yourself or somebody really close to you in your life. They're not easy to write, but I think if you have that perspective, then if other people also enjoy it and benefit from it, that's a bonus. I wasn't sure if my book will be published. I was writing things for myself and they kind of became a book. They were more essays. And I realized people asked me to share it with them and it makes sense to just publish it as a book. And I think these are the best books. And I can tell that yours was written as a very intimate story to really maybe an audience of one. That's how it reads.
I can tell you this. Okay, so I've had feedback of people who say that a finance book makes them cry at times. And I can tell you this, that the author has some tears coming down his cheeks writing the book, because there is some intimacy there. And that's a strange mix, right? To write an emotional book at times about the process of financial achievement.
Right.
Sure. I brought tears to my son's eyes. That's the best praise in the world, man. If you could reach that level, now you're getting somewhere. Now you might be able to actually impact a person and how they view things, their mindsets, that sort of thing.
I love it. So let me ask you about financial freedom. You touched on it a little bit. And you say it's not a single ingredient, but it's a way of life. Could you tell me more? Anybody that's hearing the idea for the first time, why it's not a one thing, it's kind of a way of life that you present in the book?
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, keep in mind that I wrote the book after, okay? I'm not the 25-year-old that wrote the book about how to. You know, you read books and you assimilate what you read and you write a book. And so for me, I thought that I could have something worth saying to my son because I actually achieved it and I went through it. I can tell you that, yeah, my life look for the secrets of success, the secrets of finance? Sure. I mean, those are little catchphrases that get people to buy your book. But boy, oh boy, all I know is there's about 100 ways you can fail. And there's about, 50 ways that you're supposed to be doing things right. And it can get to be a real clutter to the point where you can become overwhelmed. And so you have to come to, in your own life, disseminating all the information out there to find out who's worth listening to, what's real, what's not real, what is just being parroted from past generations as part of our culture that isn't real. You have to get through all that. What works? As an entrepreneur, that's all that matters is what works. And, your theories just don't matter anymore. That's just entertainment a lot of times. And I, believe me, I'm entertained by success literature. I'm one of those people I'm a self-helper. But there's a point where I do realize that I'm just doing it for entertainment and then not for take-homes. So yeah, it's a way of life, 100%. I mean, and people say that you're talking about money. Well, I'm talking about lack of materialism. Back away from materialism. That's the only way you're going to save, guys. Okay. I'm talking about sacrifice. You're not, when my friends are buying big houses and they're indulging, I'm all for it. Knock yourself out. I wish I had it. Okay. But what I wish I had more was financial freedom.
Right.
I saw one thing that you wrote once in your talk, and it's my philosophy. And it's about creating the kind of life that you don't want to vacation from. I cannot tell you how important that was to me. When you talk about financial freedom, to me, it was all about going on a vacation and not being bummed about coming back to my life.
Exactly.
That is not okay. What is wrong with that? Not okay for me. So that was a demand in my life. I wasn't asking. I wasn't hoping, wishing. If I couldn't correct that, a part of me was going to die. 100%. That to me is what financial freedom was. Yeah, money does play a part into that. I'm sorry. People will say, well, money's not everything. Well, yeah, it's not. But unless you don't have it, then it is. Then it is everything. It's everything for your kids going to college. It's everything for you trying to get ahead. It's everything for you trying to pay back your student debt. Let's just get that money thing off the table. And now we can talk about our life, our lifestyle, right?
I love it.
Yeah. And maybe we can start flying single engine planes like you. That's pretty cool. I love that.
Well, it was a child's dream to be a pilot, and I made it happen when I moved to New York, and over a long time, I finally got my license. Yeah, it's one of the things.
You might push me over the edge because I live beside an airport here in Latrobe, Pennsylvania.
Oh,
I'm always driving beside that thing.
Go try it. Have you ever taken a lesson?
You know what? I have a friend who's he was getting his pilot, whatever you want to call it, the hours. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Little did I know, I'm the guinea pig sitting in the back seat while, in the cockpit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, we're cruising around, going through the clouds, bumping up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's pretty cool. My wife doesn't think so much that it's cool. She might think she might lose a husband. But,
well, it's an incredible experience. And I know that they do some discovery hour or something like that. A lot of schools do. So if you can go and just try and see and be in control for a minute.
Well, I'm not a big believer in coincidences, so maybe this is God's way of telling me it's time, John, it's time. So we'll see.
I have another question that's related to what you were talking about, living a certain life. And you have a definition of prosperity, or at least I read it as a definition of prosperity, which is the power to take a walk in the woods on a weekday. And you talk more about being able to afford college tuition and having choices and options and so on. But that walk in the woods really spoke to me because as a kid, I spent a lot of time walking in the woods. And you might have seen in some of my articles how when the pandemic happened, my wife and I moved to a cabin in the woods. And it was really helpful for us leaving New York at the time and having the space to work and flourish. And we took walks every day, a lot of the time in the middle of the day. And these days I go surf in the middle of the day. And I don't feel guilty about it. But tell me more about your definition of prosperity and why that walk is important. And it's a symbol of something. And I thought it really resonated with me. So tell me more about that.
What I'd like to talk about is, and I don't feel guilty about it. Like, because isn't that what's wrong with us? Whatever.
Right?
Like, I always say, by the time you achieve those things you want so much, it changes you to the degree that you have a hard time sitting down and enjoying that financial freedom because you become this warrior who can like put the pedal down and keep it down and maintain endurance forever. And so now, okay, you got it. It's hard to put the brake on. So I love that saying. I don't feel guilty. And I'm still working on that, not feeling guilty.
We all do.
Yeah. As far as that's concerned, though, I have never lost sight of the fact that right now, when I'm done with you, I have the option of going for a walk. You know, I didn't have that for 30 years of my life. I would have to wait till I would say my tired time on the weekends, because that I was over the work, you know. And so now I move into my tired weekends where my time is to revitalize, spend time with my family. But yeah, there was always some, you know, red eyes and dark circles, and I was tired and it wasn't my best of me. I would work Friday nights. I'd work Saturday mornings. I was an entrepreneur. You know, this is how it is in small business. Everybody wants to have their own business. Well, it's a lot of work. To take a walk on a Thursday at 3 o'clock, I hope I never take that for granted. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we do kind of take our new life for granted. Like, I think everybody listening right now, we would say 5 years ago, we probably have a lot of the things we were hoping for 5 years ago. And you know what's the problem is? We're on this hedonic treadmill, always looking for the next happiness and forgetting about that surf because it's so normal in your life. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. I'm sure there's a time in your life you don't get to surf. Okay. Yeah. And so all of a sudden, like, you just got to always, always get back to that. Okay. Thank you, God, for this right now, the simple pleasure. I always call it the simple pleasures, because if you can't have the simple pleasures when you're poor, life will get complicated when you're rich, and you're still not going to be happy without the simple pleasures when you have money. It really comes down to those little things and seeing them, and appreciating them every day. Simple pleasures are big to me.
So I'm immediately thinking that there was a point in your life when you could already go for that walk, but you were not doing it yet. Can you talk about it? I'm curious how much more time it took you to realize I can already do that. And I think it happens to a lot of us. Especially when you're, you know, frugal, you're saving. You don't know that you're already there. Can you talk about it?
100%. And you know, I when I get on a podcast like this, I feel like, okay, here's what I'm comfortable with. This is what happened to me. That's all. I can't tell other people how to live. I'm not. That's not my role. This is what happened to me. Okay, and this is how it worked. And that's exactly. I can say that on my, you know, in the good and the bad, I might have erred on the side of working too long. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I see your writings about value investing. I mean, I get the whole idea about how you err on the side of margins of safety and all this kind of stuff with that concept. I probably could have stopped 5 years. I probably could have retired at 45. Mm-hmm. But what do? I'm going to get a little bit bigger buffer. So that's really safe. So if everything screws up in the end, I'm rationalizing now that I have a big enough margin that I'll be okay, right? So I passed up my goals somewhere around early 40s and kept going to the 45, kept going 47. And then I started itching to get out because I knew it was time, but I still didn't have so to know it's time and to quit a practice like I had, it's not so easy. You become really entrenched with your patience, with your lifestyle. To pull that trigger was not I would like to say that, yeah, I just knew what I was going to do. I marched up those steps. I plotted it out. I did what I had to do. It wasn't like that at all. I was terrified to stop doing it was really impossible. I didn't listen to that inner voice. Not at all. I kept on doing it, even though I know I shouldn't. It's time. You got to where you wanted to get to. It's time for other things. I didn't do that. It took a major injury in my life, which I describe in the book. Yeah. Right there. So I lost a finger in an accident. It took some time, and that's what ended up getting me out of chiropractic and into a different life. Was I exceptionally great and bold? No, not at all. Not at all.
You took your time. I had a conversation with Brett Barrett from Truzify. I'm sure you know of him, or maybe you know Brett. Mm-hmm. But he mentions how people do the math and they have a number they want to reach to be financially independent. And once they get there, the hardest thing is to actually acknowledge it and maybe start making some changes in your life where you don't have to push as hard or work as hard or take on the extra project. And I think it's a big realization because we get so comfortable with the routine of every day showing up, every day delivering. And the walk in the middle of the day, we do feel guilty about it. I think it's a universal human condition because
Well, good. I feel better then. I'm not so messed up. I'm not as psychologically messed up as I suspect then, maybe. But yeah,
I mean, John, to be honest with you, when you think about our, you know, shared history at the age of 6 or 7, or we go to school or even earlier, and the hours between 8 a.m. until 5 p.m., 6 p.m., 4 p.m., depending on the time, right? School, high school, college, then work. We gave up those hours for decades of our life. Right? So we don't even know what it looks like to be outside, not on a mission for work or a project or anything like that, but in the middle of the day doing nothing other than just looking at the trees, smelling flowers, and going for a walk, right? We don't really have that experience. It's as foreign as walking on the moon.
100%. 100%. You know, there's a book out called The Paradox of Choice, which people that are over their head in the whirlwind of life, that all they want is, you know, 2 hours a day off to call their own my time, right? You just want, can I have one choice as my own? That's all you want. You know, I would say that was an interesting book because it explained a lot of how it works in retirement, where you have nothing but choices. Okay. Right. Nothing but. And it's almost better to have 3 or 4 choices than endless choices, right?
It's overwhelming. We work with families that either inherited wealth or made substantial wealth in their lifetime. Sometimes, you know, it feels like a sudden event in the life, although it could have been a long time coming. But the moment when you do have all those choices, you didn't realize you had them the day before or the week before or the year before, it is a very overwhelming experience. And one question is, do I have to continue to work? What do I want to do with my time? And it's very similar to, you know, a financial independence FIRE movement experience when you reach a certain number. It's very similar. You have to make up your mind what you want to do next.
You know, yeah, 100%. And I think it really comes back to now it's going to test your soul a little bit, because it's so simple, because whenever you have to make the money and you have to make the excess money, and because you have deep purposes, maybe for your family or whatever, right? It's a little bit easier because your path is so clear. Mm-hmm. And people say, well, I'm in that path and it doesn't feel easy to me. And I get that. I'm not saying it's easy that way. I would say, though, whenever you get to the point where you have nothing but freedom, you have choices. You see a lot of people get outside, start picking up twigs in their backyard. My brother, he had retired before me. He says, you know, I know why people pick up twigs in their backyard, because they don't want to go crazy. He goes, they're trying not to go crazy because there's so much time. People, you know, I think that there is a time when you never quite arrive. You never quite arrive and say, it's utopia and now I'm happy for the rest of my life. It's not like that. It's more like, I have choices now. And if I sit on my ass all day long, I am going to be so unhappy and so unfulfilled. Mm-hmm. But if I work all the time, I'm going to be so unhappy and so unfulfilled because I have choices now. And you're going through a process of this is just soul quest type stuff to me. Maybe you have a chance for balance. My wife and I are there. We're getting close to 60. We say, you know, maybe 6 hours a day of purposeful activity. Call it work if you want. I call it purposeful activity, where you have a goal and you're actually intent. Mm-hmm. You know, I always get frustrated with the word work, because people say, oh, work life.
I do too.
Work life.
I do too.
Oh, what the hell? Wait. I'm just talking about vital engagements. It's vital engagements. We need that. The question is how much? And you can answer that in retirement. I like the idea of 6 hours, a deep work, you know, when you're like in it. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about sitting in your desk looking out the window work.
Right.
But something that actually strains you, puts you in the edge of your capacity, actually uses your potential, whatever you want to call your potential, whatever you want to call your gifts, whatever you want to do for humanity, for whatever. You want to raise earthworms, it's okay with me, as long as it matters to you. You'll feel some sort of fulfillment to that. You will not be happy with that in retirement, without that in retirement. That's why people go to sign up for hospitals, and just to use their time on something they like doing. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about balance. I'm not taking away your surfing, but I do notice the fact that you probably don't have to be in this podcast, but your listeners will see that you are. Uh-huh. And so that's what retirement, quote unquote, is all about. You're using your time. You find meaning in it. I'm honored to be here. I'm doing the same thing that you are. I'm busting my butt in my basement writing my second book, and I have to get clear on why I do that. Uh-huh. Because I have a lot of options that aren't that hard right now. You know, so
it's a calling.
Yeah, I do believe in these words. Some people are a little more cynical about that. I do believe in divine callings. I do believe in dharma. I do believe in maybe not, you don't always figure out your life purpose, but you certainly have a little bit of a purpose in the next 5 years. You know what that is. And then you can decide again when that 5 years is over.
You know, I have so much fun with this podcast. I get to sit down and talk to interesting people, and I've been reaching out to friends and friends of friends, and people recommend people to me, and I reached out to you, and you were so kind to join me. But when people say, are you working on the podcast? And I cringe because I say, well, it doesn't feel like work. I'm having fun with it. I'm looking forward to it. I have fun rereading the books. I have fun writing the questions. I'm excited to see what John will say to some of those questions, you know? So when you say, is this work? I think it stopped being work a long time ago.
And, you know, I think a lot of people will really, really envy you for that statement. I know all my life, I would have loved to have that statement. Like, I was really burdened by, you know, I was at one point I was doing my practice, plus I was flipping houses, plus we were building our rental business, plus all of this stuff. It turned into a lot of heavy, heavy work. And, you know, I once heard, like, what is work? Work is what you have to do. So I kind of write the book. That's work. It's purpose. You want purpose in your life, and sitting in front of the TV isn't purpose. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's all we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Life without purpose, it's just not for me.
Finding it is the hard part. I want to ask you about the daily practice. And you have a quote that I really like by Robert Louis Stevenson. Don't judge each day by the harvest you reap, but by the seeds you plant. And in your book, you talk about time, hours, weekly schedule, impact activity. Tell me more about it. You're very thoughtful, and you just talked about it quite a bit, how you spend your time. And even, you know, dedicating this hour to sit with me, that I really appreciate. You're very thoughtful about it, and you've been, and that's why you are where you are. But can you talk more about it? I think a lot of us forget how time is really the most precious asset we have, right? We can borrow money, but we can't borrow time, somebody told me.
100%. And I hear everybody say it, right? I can tell you, it's the sacred ground that I worship, okay, every day, okay? Hours, to me, are so important that I can tell you this. I track them. How many hours do I write a day? I know that. How many hours will I walk up to my business and, you know, I set that as a goal? Hours, to me, if you're not tracking, I sometimes say that we leave ourselves really open to self-deceit. I share this example in my own book. I'm not speaking from a pulpit. I'm speaking from being an idiot who can think he's working hard, but without tracking, wait, I'm just deceiving myself. Am I really using my full potential? All I know for sure is most of us are going to have to work 40 hours a week just to stay alive, period. And I get the fact that there's going to be margins on the side of those 40 hours. You know, you're going to have to bring food with you. You're going to have to get dressed. You have to take showers. So let's call it 50. But let's back this up now. Okay, so now we have 50 down. That's just to keep a roof over your head, to be a responsible person. You're going to live a good life. All I know for sure is most of us are awake 16 hours a day, waking hours. You add that up, that's about 112 hours a week. Mm-hmm. We got 50 of them off the board.
Right.
Okay, so people talk about work-life balance. You're working too much. Wait a minute. That's not even balance to me. Work. Wait, okay, can I put a little bit more purpose into this week? That's all. Okay, can I put some more purpose hours into this week? Because I got 40 of them knocked down already.
Right.
I'm seeing about 70 more, at which point I cannot think, not plan, not do anything for my full potential. Like what gets done there? I track that stuff because it can go in the whirlwind. There is a whirlwind of busyness. It's not like ambitious people listening to you are sitting on the couch smoking cigarettes and doing nothing. What they're so busy doing is so many small things that they can't get to the big things in life. And I track it. And my God, to do a sacred effort, which is something in the book that I talk about, the sacred effort, there is a whole line of sacred no's to get there. You know, whenever I'm building my wealth, there's no entertainment. Whenever I'm building my wealth, there's no drinking and socializing and wasting time that way. Whenever I'm building my wealth, like, so there's a lot of no's along the way, right?
Right.
That's what gets you to a sacred yes. I track it. My goal today is to have 6 hours of writing in. I think I have 3 hours down. We're going to do this podcast. You're going to exhaust me. So I'm going to go for a walk.
I was hoping you will feel energized after this, and you'll write to the 3 hours worth in half an hour.
Well, it's good. It's good and bad. But like you have good. You have questions that are really deep, and I love the fact that you do. So it does. It leaves you a little elated, and it leaves you a little spent, right?
Uh-huh. A little bit of both.
I see you on TED Talks. When you walk off that stage, it's not like you're ready to run a marathon, you know.
Uh-huh.
So it takes a little out of you. So yeah, that's how it works. But I track time. and I track it religiously. Maybe it's not for everybody, but I know my hours every week that are used.
I can relate. I do the same because I'm always curious where my days go and what I do and how I can use my time better and what really adds value. And I like that concept that you mentioned, you know, what has impact. And you can really spend a whole day and then you realize none of those things really matter. And
well, I've done it. Sure.
We've all done it.
I can speak from experience and I can say that I've had a life without traction and a life with traction. And I say one of my greatest gifts of life is that I'm average in every way. And because I'm so darn average, God made me this way that I had to get a hold of my potential and use it. And you're either using your time or you're not using your potential.
Exactly.
Period.
Wow. Beautifully said. I want to ask you about discomfort, and you talk about it quite a bit in the book. So it's not all easy. And I'm thinking about stock investing specifically, but you talk about discomfort in general, in life, in pursuing goals. There are moments that will test you. But in investing, I'm thinking that the best ideas, usually people disagree with you. There's a lot of discomfort around buying some ideas, but they prove to be the best ideas. And I see parallels with what you talk about, the moments in life when the easy path is not the path that will get you there, but the discomfort is something you have to tolerate and accept. Can you talk more about it?
I'm a big fan of discomfort from a distance, okay? Uh-huh. I really admire the discomfort you'll put up with yourself. I admire the discomfort of Iron Men who will do these crazy feats. I admire people that can go into the stock market, know what they want. They know there's blood in the street and fear everywhere, and they do the right thing by God. Uh-huh. Oh my God, I hate discomfort personally, you know? And that's just being a human being, but you got to be above your human fears. You know, we're not all strong all the time. And I just try to make my decisions when I'm in my strong mind. I always say that. I know that whenever I will make choices, it's not out of meekness and it's not in the times that I feel scared. It's not in the times that I feel tired. No. I'll wait till I get a little stronger because then I'll choose what I want most over ease. I'll choose effort over ease if the effort's worth it. You don't just choose discomfort because, well, it's a grand old happy time. It is discomfort. You choose it when that sacrifice is worth it. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're an athlete and you're trying to get better, that discomfort is just exactly aligned with what you want. Now we're talking about purposeful hours again. And God set this world up in a way that everything you want takes effort. And discomfort. And it just falls apart if you don't do it. Everything that tastes good, you should spit out. Everything that it's this. The work of earning is a test. And I think we have to learn to harden our characters through it all. Work oftentimes puts us through all kind of discomfort. And like you said, I admire. I love the people who you love. The Templetons, the Warren Buffetts, the people who can stand their ground and say, no, I understand you guys are just killing this market as today, as we're going through recently. Mm-hmm. But you know, they sit back and they look at their books and say, you know, it's still a good company. You people are wrong. Yeah. And they hold to it. And they
takes a lot.
Oh, it takes a better person than me. I know for a fact that it's, I could ask you for advice because I always seem to find myself looking at the stock market, which I know I'm not supposed to. Mm-hmm. But it's a weakness. I want to say, what's going on now?
I was going to ask you about it. You share in your book about your experience with the dot-com bubble. So that was 25 years ago or so.
Yeah.
And it's a whole big topic about when people have their first experience with the market and how they react to it. You chose real estate as your avenue to create wealth. Can you talk about the two different places where you can create wealth and how they compare in your mind and why you chose one? I have some guesses, but I'm curious to hear from you. And you kind of hinted how you feel about the stock market, and I'm guessing the volatility and the daily price and all those things that come with it.
No, I get it on a rational level. I love investing. Some of my favorite people are those who invest well. I'm attracted to the field. I think if I was 21 years old and I had to go into a field, it would be what you did. Mm-hmm. Like, I love that idea. Okay. It's just that by the time I got myself into the situation I did, which is what is that situation? It's a family of four with people, who need me. They're going to be approaching college. My money compounded over 30 years doesn't help them as much. I needed something right now. Okay.
Right.
Now, meantime, understand that chiropractic is part of the whole medical profession. And every year, that whole the insurance reimbursement was getting harder and harder and harder. And so it was, my money was being taken away from me while my kids are getting older and I didn't have 30 years to wait. Now, that's just being sitting down and thinking, taking that walk in the woods like you're talking about. You talk about space to have time and think, okay, you know, we have a mind to think out things rationally. It wasn't going to work for me to wait 30 years because my kids are going to college. And so I understand compounding, man, but I didn't have time for it at that time. I was just too burdened by debt. Mm-hmm. So what I chose, what's the difference between that and where I went? I chose a river. Okay, I always say that if you're looking for stock market and equity investing, it's a good approach. You know, trust the future. It always goes up over time. You know, be patient. Of course, you have to be emotionally skilled as well to not do the dumb things everybody does. Those market returns aren't real for the average person because they do the dumb things, yeah. Right? As you would know. So your job would be to keep people from not doing the dumb things. Mm-hmm. For me, I needed money more quickly. And so I said, you know, I'm going to go after a river of passive income, quote unquote, passive. Real estate was a venture for me that happened slowly at first. I was just went into it to see. It's not like I set up this dharma for life and said, here's my purpose. No, you venture into things, you try them and see how it works. That's all. I bought one house. Well, that didn't go too well. And I bought another house. And so you figure this out. But it is working over time. Because I came from the stock market, I could see that I was making about 20% at least from my own money in the game, right? Mm-hmm. In real estate, you have your own money that you put in. Maybe that's $10,000, $20,000, whatever. But on that money, paying back all loans and netting out, I was making 20 to 25% at the time. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes you get lucky margin of safety. I went into 2007 knowing what I was doing. And then the best opportunity for buying houses and rentals in the world has shown up in front of me. I was sitting right there, already skilled with money, sitting there waiting when the whole housing market went to, you know, crap. So there's a lot of luck there. All of a sudden we're buying foreclosures at, you know, dimes on the dollar. And so it was a big, big, lucky, fortuitous game at the time. Mm-hmm. For me, and another person's misfortune happened to be my luck, I guess. It's kind of perverse, but at that time, that's what happened. We developed a river. That said, I have so much myself, I guess the word is admiration for a person who can maintain their calm and not do the wrong things in the market in times of fear and greed.
I just want to be the least wrong. And that's the idea. I meet a lot of people that made money in, you know, privately held businesses or real estate. And the big thing that they mention is that when you enter the public market, you get a daily quote. Nobody gives you a daily quote on your house. Although these days, maybe with some apps, you can almost tell what the house price is, but not to the extent that the stock market tells you minute to minute. And I think that's something that on an emotional level, it's very hard to embrace for a lot of people. And
the daily ticker is difficult. You mean seeing it?
Yeah.
100%. I'm one of those people. Okay. I won't hold myself out above that. I fight it. Okay. I use a rational mind that's smarter than my emotional mind. I get it. I love the quote that, you know, the stock market is a device for transferring money from the impatient to the patient. I get it. I'm smarter than my emotions. So I don't do it. I'm not really happy with where my money has gone in the past 2 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not happy at all, but I don't need it either. So I'm not going to touch it. And so, yeah, I really love people like the Templetons, who have mastered that. The Lynches, you said, I read the same book. I love all those people. It's an emotional game, but so too is real estate. It's emotional as well.
Of course.
And you know, all these people that are telling you, well, they don't have the emotional ride of the stock markets up and down. They're not telling you about the tenant who trashed their place. When you walk in and you see it and it's like, oh my God, who lived here? Like, it's not emotionless either. So it's going to be one or the other.
I like how you said it. It's not really passive because people see real estate as passive. Well, I think it's a second job. And I think it's, you know, it's worth knowing that it is a second job.
Let's put it this way. They say it's a dollar. It's an hour per door. And I believe that's true. An hour a month per door. That's the formula for real estate. So if you're used to small business, if you're used to working 40 hours a week, it's going to feel like a non-job to you. It really is. If you get the right person in there, you get the wrong person in there, it's going to feel like hell on wheels and you're just going to get out of it, period.
I hear you. So many of my guests are accomplishing their fields, just like you, with your pursuits and your success and you're reaching financial independence. They all talk about deep work, deep concentration, or even monk-like in a time of solitude, just to hear their own thoughts. And you talk about it quite a bit in the book, and you touched on it briefly. Can you talk more about it? Why is that so important, that the deep work time in your day, in your week, to make progress?
Well, 100%. I think that, the goal is not to be at your job. You know, a lot of people show up and they're at their job 8 hours a day. The goal is to be in your job. I can tell you that whenever I'm in a practice, my job is to zone, to give my focus to you, you, one patient. That's all. After another, after another, after another. We'd walk into our clinic and I would say, hey, how many people are we seeing today? And they always fall for the same thing. 35, 28, 102, whatever it was. You know, it was crazy numbers. And I said, no. We're seeing one. And I'm always bringing them back. And that's so important. It's just, you got only have so much time to give, so much energy. You got to connect with people and you got to connect with your work. And I think one of the best books that I ever read for this, I really consider it a classic. It's a modern day classic called Deep Work. Cal Newport.
It's a great book.
It's a fantastic book. He just crushed it on the book. And it helped me as an author to understand that, okay, so you got it down there and make it like Hemingway says, you got to just sit down and bleed. That's the goal. You got to go that deep. It's not about this joyride where the muse hits you and you light candles and make it hurt. You know, the deep work is really intense. And that's the kind of thing that leads to impact, the intense concentration. And I think that's the goal these days. It's about concentration. We're not digging ditches anymore. When you say work, like you and I spoke of before, we don't have shovels in our hands. No. What we're talking about is our time and our attention. That's what we call our work. Like you and I, this is work, because this is what I would do in my off hours. Talk to people like this. And the conversations weren't nearly as engaging as talking to you. I can tell you that. It was always hard to find that group of people that I would like to engage with. So if this is work, count me in. Okay. Because I did this when I wasn't working all my life. Okay. So that's the whole thing I say. Deep work is huge to me because it uses my potential that way.
It can make all the difference. I really like that. You write about frugality. And you touched on it very briefly at the beginning. And there's this saying that rich people can live as if they were broke and broke people live as if they were rich. And that's basically the recipe for never getting there in terms of wealth or keeping your wealth and growing it. And the mindset of frugality and spending your money, you were talking about material goods and your friends buying big homes, you making different choices. Can you talk about your concept of frugality? How far do you take it? I had guests on the show who take frugality really, really far. So yeah. I'm curious where
the fire people, man. I like they get a lot of criticism. I like them. So it's our only sacrificing, right? For me, you know, I believe in good. Okay. Like I have a family to raise. It's not just me. Okay. So I'm probably not a great person to ask on this one because I operated all my life on a certain degree of fear. And I don't say that they'll bash that as far as scarcity comes. You know, you have a scarcity mindset. That's no way to live. You're supposed to think abundant. It's like, well, wait a minute. Sometimes when you feel fear, that just means you're paying attention. Okay.
Right.
And so for me, frugality, getting money in the bank was the equivalent of security. Okay. Mm-hmm. It was about that. Now I have to work it backwards and say that what we did wasn't we put on ourselves out a budget and I sat down in the room with the family and made that nice little budget and we all stuck to it. What I found to work was that we put ourselves on budget, on allowances. My kids got allowances. I got an allowance. My wife got an allowance. And what that does is we only have so much to spend now. Now we figured out like, okay, if we're good, if we're disciplined and intentional, we don't see ourselves spending any more than this amount of money. We don't need it.
Right.
Okay. So it goes into everybody's bank. So it, to me, it kept it contained. Now the rest of it could roll over and go into the investment accounts. So I think one of the greatest differences in my life looking around, because I see a lot of people making a ton of money and they're intelligent, but they still don't get wealthy. They still don't have, they're going to work till they're 80 years old because they spend too much money. And when I say work, they're doing work they don't want. That's what I mean by that. So they're stuck in jobs they don't want because they spend too much. We put little containers, each person gets a little container, and the rest would go over here. Now, you know, the Parkinson's law, where people will start to increase their savings, increase their spending according to their money coming in. I didn't do that. What I started with when I was in my 30s, I probably take even less now. You know, I love Warren Buffett. Like you said, one of the richest guys in the world. He says, I don't know how to spend beyond $100,000 a year. I don't even know how to spend that. Okay. I just don't. I'm happy with where we are. We're far below that as far as what we need. And yet we make a far, far above that. I love the idea of being a wealthy minimalist. And that's kind of what we are, is wealthy minimalists. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take you a whole lot of money to buy that surfboard and then use that time every day. That's that walk right. in the woods doesn't cost a lot of money. Frugality to me has always been linked a little bit to fear and to goals, both. I'm probably not a good person to talk to because it's always been so ingrained in my DNA, you know?
I love it. Can you talk about that fear? What's the worst that can happen in your mind?
What's the worst that could happen in my mind? Okay, I'll speak again of my own life. Mm-hmm. Every year, let's say it's 2010, the new year rolls around and the insurance company sent us a big happy letter saying that, well, we're gonna increase everybody's deductibles and everybody's copays. Well, that's great. Next year rolls around, we're going to increase everybody's, meaning every year they're going to pay less. Right. So they put a goal in there that we're going to help people stay away from you, young man. I mean, there's stories in my book about insurance companies getting a little worse than that about how controlling money. But yeah, the worst that could happen to me is it could dry up. And I'm heading down this road where my kids are going to school. I know the pain that caused me in my life, that big invisible, it's like a cloud of student debt. And by God, it's not easy to pay back. And I just think, boy, if I could just give them one thing, they don't have any student debt when they're done. That's what I want. I would like to start right there. Big motivation for me. I'll work in houses on the weekends. I'll work with contractors that treat me like crap. I'll do a lot of things that maybe you would call discomfort because I want that for my kids. That's all.
I like that. Yeah, it's a beautiful goal. You write about the importance of relationships and connections with people. Can you talk more about it? I found it really interesting and I notice how it really matters in my life, both on the professional level, having a network of people, and just on a personal level, making friendships, keeping friendships and having people in your life.
I think the term that I've always found useful is, once again, it's not my term, but it comes from Andrew Carnegie. And, you know, he was the richest guy in the world at one point. And, you know, he never told somebody what to do. Mm-hmm. He always asks them. He asks questions. Would you mind doing this for me? Would you mind doing this? One time they asked him, Andrew Carnegie, what exactly do you do? Because he's got done explaining he knows nothing about the manufacture of steel. They said, well, you're in charge of the biggest steel company in the world. What exactly do you do? He says, my job is harmonious cooperation of everybody here. He says, if you ever try to get two people to cooperate in a business, you'll understand what my role is. And harmonious cooperation to me was always it. That word, it strikes a chord with me in my now a property management business. It strikes a chord with me within my family. It strikes a chord with me spiritually, being in harmony. I do think that a lot of people will sometimes misunderstand that because they have families, they can't then pursue their goals. And I think, no, you can. In fact, it can bring you closer, but you have to communicate. You have to build your social skills. You know, you have to get rid of your pettiness, your neediness. You have to learn how to become a communicator and be in harmony with your family while they're supporting your own goals and you're supporting their goals. And that's how we always approached it. I brought my kids and my wife along. And one of the big reasons they had my back is because I was so honest. I wanted my kids to see what's happening here. Like, guys, this is what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that insurance is going to dry up. I'm this age right now. I don't have a plan B. I'm trying to get a plan B. This is why I'm doing it. And so I would try to explain that to them continually, as well as them, you know, explaining their life to me. And because of that openness, I just never had that problem when there was a problem with people say, well, you know, you're working too much. You're out of balance. You're like, no, I wasn't. Not at all. In fact, you'll see a lot of people, they come to tears talking about the sacrifices of their parents because they know that their parents did a lot to help them. Yeah, harmony to me is a big, big, big word. It always was and it still is in retirement.
I love it. One of the questions I like to ask my guests is about success and their own definition of success. And I get to hear a lot of interesting ideas and thoughts about it. I'm curious, what's your definition of success? Is it a journey? Is it a destination? How do you know you're on track? How do you think about it?
It's definitely not a destination, but there are points to get to. Absolutely. I would say that, getting back to the harmony thing, if I'm in harmony with the lifestyle that I have, if I'm in harmony with my soul, with the way I'm living my life, if I'm in harmony with my family, if I'm in harmony with my financial status, meaning, you know, we all have this idea within us of what we want. Hopefully it's not just born of nothing. You know, you know a why, a cause. Like, that's what I mean by that. Is your life in harmony with that? And I'm telling you, I wanted to get to that life, getting back to one of the things you said about having the kind of life you don't want to vacation from. Mm-hmm. To me, that's all I need. Okay. People say, well, why'd you stop when you got 110 rentals? I said, well, I know where my enough is enough. Okay. I know where my enough is. The pursuit of success can just become another addiction that people are after. It's a new buzz in their head, a new dopamine rush. They do another thing. No, what's your enough and why? Now, I'm okay with it if you want to keep on going. Like, but my why was satisfied. I got to the point where I didn't have to think about money, and that's all I ever wanted. Now we can just get on with it. Okay. Because money consumes so much of my time. Health, absolutely. I want to run the Ironman someday. Maybe a plane. Maybe you're talking me into that. I always wanted to. Yeah, spiritual things. I'm a meditator. I believe in having an inner harmony within yourself. I would say that if my relationships got out of balance, I would say that is not okay with me. That's not success. It's more than one thing. And you know, it'll always change. Sometimes it'll swing one way, sometimes it'll swing another. And I would say that I don't believe in a big life purpose. I do believe in a purpose now. And mm-hmm. I'll figure that out once I get this next purpose. That's success to me. I hope I die with a to-do list in my pocket. That's the goal. I'm always going to be pursuing something.
It's interesting that you say that. I can relate to it. And I had many guests that told me about success, that they want that last day of their life to be a day when they just started something else they're excited about. And I thought, wow, that's a very interesting concept. So you're almost on the way out. This is the last day, but you want to get started on something new that keeps you going through that last day. And I thought, this is a very cool idea to have in your head in terms of motivation.
If you don't, you're living without purpose.
Exactly.
That's all. And we're getting back to that over and over and over again. I swear to God, it's just about what is, you know, are you going to put purpose in your day? And how much of it? And that's mm-hmm. all. You get to choose, you know, but the purpose will line up with the things you want. And so it's a really cool game. We live in a free enterprise system. We get to set it all up. And, you know, but that's only if we use our brains and say, okay, how do I make this happen? What is my life out of harmony right now? How can I make that better? I mean, that's so important. To me, success is evolving that way. And maybe it's that self-actualization thing that we talk about with the hierarchies, you know?
I love it. John, thank you so much. This was incredible. We covered so much ground, and I'll include in the notes links to your book, and I highly recommend to everyone. There's so much to learn from your story and your experience, and I wish you a very enjoyable walk. I imagine that's where you're headed. I'm going to go surf.
Oh, yeah. It's 20 degrees outside. I hate you. Maybe I got to start structuring my life to find some more harmony at the minute. Well, thank you. You know, it's an honor to be on your podcast. I know you're a guy who should be interviewed yourself. So the fact that you've taken your time and found time for me, thank you. Appreciate that a lot.
And I'd love to have you again when you're ready with the second book. I didn't ask about it. I know it's a work in progress, but I'd love to have you back.
Well, if you can see me, I know your listeners are going to be audio only. You can see my red eyes. This is how it looks for me when I start writing books. I start looking like somebody from a scare movie because the deep work pulls it out of me. Uh-huh. So, but you were a pleasure. You didn't take it out of me today. So it was a pleasure. You elevated me.
You feel energized and motivated to keep going. Enjoy your walk.
We were doing fantastic right up until you said about that surf, and now I'm back to the doldrums.
I'm sure your walk will be equally enjoyable.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, John. You were listening to Talking Billions. We talk about big ideas, big inspirations, big topics. We take on the hardest subject of all, money. But our conversations lead us to an even bigger question: what it means to live a rich life beyond money. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment and follow, subscribe, rate, and share with friends and family. We rely on word of mouth to promote the show. One click for you means the world to us. Thank you. Until next time, your host, Bogumil Baranowski. The content of this podcast is for general informational purposes only, and so are the opinions of members of Seekard Associates, a registered investment advisor, and guests of the show. This podcast does not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any specific security or financial instruments, or provide investment advice or service. Past performance is not indicative of future results. More information on Sicard Associates is available in its Form ADV disclosure documents available at advisorinfo.sec.gov.